Good afternoon.
Hi, Eileen.
How are you? Good to see you.
Good to be seen.
And looks like Terry's joining us. You hear me okay, Scott?
I am perfect.
Good, okay.
Yeah, I have had trouble using my phone works great. I've had trouble using my Surface. So if and I find if I use the phone, then I can send you that email that I've been promised.
Okay. Terry's connecting. We have some IT support in the room, which is nice. The first time doing this. It looks like Terry might be having trouble connecting. And I just wonder if we can help her out, maybe.
Well, it has
No.
mostly, but it's just mostly to do with her network.
Okay.
So there's not much we can do. And if worse comes to worse, she'll have to call in order to participate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Separately.
So if it gets to like, do you have her contact info on the phone? Can you text her or anything like that?
I've got her phone number. Yeah.
So maybe
And she has the full information of how to connect by
call in
phone
first.
when we did the
In the council
invitation.
meetings, they
It's on
usually
there.
just kind of, if someone drops off, they usually just go, oh, okay, so like in this case, so Perry looks like she's having some issues, so maybe she'll call in, but they usually just proceed.
Okay. Okay, Terry's on. No video.
Okay.
Yeah, Terry, can you hear me? This is Eileen. Do I need to check in with her where her name is shown? Would that give a
Well,
better?
what you can do is so pull up the participants.
Yeah.
This right here. Okay. Yeah, let's see. So she's got no video and it doesn't look like she has audio.
I know.
So you can chat to her using that chat thing right here. And don't go to all attendees so you can pick her specifically from that drop-down. Yeah, Terrell. And then you can type to her, do you have audio or like, what's going on? Yeah, just right down here. Just like a text on a phone. Like type, you can talk to her that way. Like ask her if she has a microphone.
How does it get sent?
It'll get sent to her through Zoom. Someone said she's muted. It's that she actually has no mic, I think.
Oh, I
So
see.
she might
I
have to
see where
call
that's
in.
okay.
Yes, yes, you're
Scott, pardon
back.
our talking. We're just,
And this, oh, you can mute yourself
yeah.
if you want.
Not to worry, Eileen. This is like most Zoom meetings I attend. This is how we spend the first 15 minutes. Hey.
Hello, Scott. How are you?
Good to see your face.
It's good to see you. It's been a while.
Yeah. I'm developing the Old Testament look here as time goes on.
It's good to have a project.
Exactly.
How are you? How have you been handling the current situation?
You know, I about 6 weeks ago now, I moved most of my office home. I mean, I'm 70. I'm assuming that this is going to cycle, mm-hmm. and that this is how I'm going to be conducting business for the near future.
So how do you feel about that?
I'm fine with it. What I'm finding, because I represent a lot of smaller communities up and down I-90 and I-5, not having travel time, save the gas, save, they don't pay me to sit and listen to books on tape as I'm driving, it's going to work pretty well. And I'm anticipating carrying a lot of this through to the future.
Sure. I actually think a lot of people are. So.
Yeah, I'm doing a series of webinars here in the next couple weeks for WCIA on incorporating or holding meetings under the governor's order, and then how to incorporate those procedures going forward. So.
Oh, okay. Do you have a lot of interest?
We'll find out. The announcement's going out, I think, later this week.
Hi, Scott. Hi, Shay. Hi, hey. Trennan. Hi, Eileen. And here comes Terry, I see, too.
We're working on getting Terry in. We're working on it right now with a little background here with IT help. Hi, Joe. Hi, Trennan.
Hello, Eileen.
Hi there.
Oh, it just says waiting? Okay.
Okay, Joe, you just went out.
Not on my screen.
There you are. There's Shay. Hi. You're muted.
Yep.
There you go.
I have dogs in the background, so
okay, got it.
Just in case.
Okay, so we're just trying to get Terry on.
That's a good idea. My dog's in the background too, so if we get them talking, we'd be in trouble.
My dog's out for a walk with Eric, so only if she comes back are we in trouble.
I got a dog and three kids in the background, so. I think I'll be muted.
I wonder if Terry's got herself without the video camera.
Well, it says we've got...
We have IT working on it right now. We're on the phone with Terry.
Oh, okay.
So if you guys can just bear with us a couple of minutes, I think we can get her on.
No problem.
Is everyone else on?
Everyone else is on.
Trennan, how are your kids doing with homeschool?
Oh, they're doing great. They are thoroughly enjoying it.
I think more importantly, how are you doing?
That's a different story. I feel like I've gotten some gray hairs in the last few months.
You're going to have to go back and have an elementary school or middle school do-over, did you?
Yeah, I got all of them. I got a preschooler going into kindergarten, a second grader, and a middle schooler.
Holy cow.
So they, it'd be nice if they all just did the same thing, but no, it's all three different things all the time.
Yep. And the way they teach today is so much different. I'm so glad both my kids are grown and out of the house, but my youngest came back home from college, so she's been taking classes virtually from the house, which she's not enjoyed. You would have thought, like, ooh, this would be a great little break. I'll just virtually do my classes, but She has not enjoyed it. Felt like it's been a real waste. She's like, I don't know what we paid money for. This is not, I'm not learning anything doing this. I was like,
Yeah, you still get the same degree.
That's right. I'm like, I don't know. It's going to count either way. So I won't tell you.
It's gotta, she just has to learn what she needs to know so she doesn't struggle in the
That's right.
future. Oh, there you go.
We're still connecting with Terry, so just so you know, that's what the status is.
I can see Terry over there.
Yes.
Just has to unmute.
Yep. And I think she realizes.
We got a picture.
We got a picture.
Got a picture, but no audio.
No audio still.
That's exciting.
Eileen, are we expecting Melanie?
Yes.
So do you, Terry, are you there?
Now we've lost the picture. I'm going to try unmute and see if. Oh. Terry's hiding her struggle.
Okay. you don't see on the Zoom screen itself on the bottom left corner the microphone icon and the video icon? You should be able to turn them on and off right there. Maybe you need to sort of click on the screen in order to pull up the menu.
Gotta love technology when it works. When it works.
Oh. Oh, there we go.
I'm connecting to audio too.
Okay, we see you. Mm-hmm. It says connecting.
Yeah, it could be also just it could a connection.
Be, it could be. I think that Terry now lives near me, and I've had horrible problems at home with the internet.
Oh yes, do that. Yeah,
that's why I found it best to use my cell phone. I'm downstream from a couple of hardworking neighbors.
Yeah, and there are certain times of the day where it somehow the bandwidth just seems to get, you know, just sucked out of the ether. You just don't have it. I don't know what it is, but it's like the same time every day. Everybody seems to be online, and you can't connect for anything.
Oh, that's probably just through the cell phone.
We don't have Melanie on yet either.
Okay, now can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Bingo. Okay, thank you very much. Sorry.
Okay, are we going to try to find out what's going on with Melanie? Because I talked to her. She was on her bike when I talked to her. So she knows about what we're doing. So can you try Melanie?
Hi, Terry. Hi, Joanna Vanderstoop. How are you?
Good. Do you guys want to wait or do you want to start? Do you want to wait till we see if we can get her on the phone? Or do you want to start? I'll leave that up to you. Well, should we give her a couple minutes? I mean, Alan's going to put a caller.
Sure. Give her a call real quick. See.
Okay.
She might be trying to get on.
Oh, Trenton, do you have the backdrop books library?
Nope. It's actual books.
Oh, it's actual books?
Yes.
Because I understand that libraries are back in homes. Studies and libraries are back in because of all the Zoom meeting backdrops that you can pick in libraries. So it's becoming a fashion must in your home.
Well, good. I'm ahead of the curve then, because we have a library in our house. We are voracious readers. So I'm already ahead of the game. I just need to find my way upstairs and have the laptop with me so people can see it in the background.
We've organized our book by color. You can see we have the black books and the white books.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that. Yeah.
If you want to find something, you just got to remember what color it is.
There you go.
I have an old enough computer that the Zoom backdrops don't work for me. I could put books in the background, but this is my best spot for reception. So,
Carrie, I got a question. We're struggling with an iPad connection again. Can you tell us how you got on? Because Melanie's having the same challenge. Turn the video and audio on.
I went to the email that I received, and it had an option to review the minutes from last meeting and the agenda for today. And then underneath that line, it said something webinar, and then it said click below, which I did. And then the Zoom meeting came up and I asked to join the meeting. Basically, I don't know how I got on.
I think if you've not used, if you don't have Zoom or not done it before, you do have to. There's a plugin you have to download. So, if you haven't used it before, if she hasn't used it before, she should go to that the meeting where you have all the details.
And they give you a number.
Yeah, and you have to click that, and it's going to ask you to download first. So she won't be able to get on unless...
She's done that already.
Yeah, and it's still not pulling up.
She's got a...
Because there's like three parts to that to get it downloaded.
In the phone, for audio at least, right? I mean, or you can call... There are also some numbers that you can call. Like, I think there were some phone numbers on the invite.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Wow.
All right.
Is she on? I was going to look for the phone number.
I think she's got it.
Okay.
But she could either do it through the phone, like we'll just set it here, and you'll be able to hear when she says something. Or she said, since you have a quorum, she's okay with you just going ahead and starting.
Oh, gosh. Let's keep her on by phone if she's okay with that. Okay, so we're going to have Melanie join us on my phone, sitting next to my computer here, so she can hear us. Because apparently there's not going to be another way to do it.
She can hear you.
She can see me?
She just can't participate, but she just can't talk.
Oh, gosh, so. That's so frustrating.
Yeah, so we'll leave the phone sitting next to Eileen, and then you'll hear it. And if you have to communicate, unfortunately, I guess that's all we'll be able to do it now.
Can it be on speakerphone?
Yeah, we'll put it on speakerphone.
Put it on speakerphone, okay.
Okay.
This is great. It's a great learning experience.
There might be a little bit
of feedback. Let me move that over. Okay. Melanie, can you hear okay?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can see you.
Okay. Well, I can't see you. That's so sad. Well, welcome everybody.
I think for the feedback, Eileen, we might want to, if folks aren't talking, probably everybody should go on mute. That way you won't hear that feedback in the background.
Okay.
You mean?
Could everybody go on mute but me? And then I'll let Trenton speak. Let's see how that goes.
Did you start the broadcast?
It started. Yeah, I think so. The question came up, did I start the broadcast? Okay. So Melanie, I still hear a lot of echoing. It's okay. Okay, it's just going to go with the flow. We'll just put it over here a little bit more. Okay, all right. Well, welcome again. Hi, everybody. This is it's been a tough week, hasn't it? And it's been really challenging. I just want to acknowledge that before we start. You know, knowing what we do, and that actually today is devoted to talking about hiring police officers. So it's an interesting challenge to be thinking about for the future, because I think it will become certainly more challenging. That said, I just wanted to let you know the police chief is not with us today. Sadly, he called me and he had to go to the demonstration of Paul's Bow. And there is going to be apparently a demonstration on Bainbridge on Thursday, but he is there in Paul's Bow right now. And that was where he needed to be rather than at the meeting. But he does express his apologies for not being here. So I wanted to make sure that you knew that. And with that, Trenton, I'll go ahead and turn the meeting over to you to start.
Okay, perfect. Welcome everybody. It is 3:14, calling to order. First thing I'd like to do is go around and mention any conflicts of interest that may have come up in the since the last meeting. I'll start with Trenton Bird, no conflicts to report.
Shay Dobrico, no conflicts to report.
Carrie Decker, no conflicts to report. Did you hear that?
Yes.
Joe Vanderstoop, no conflicts to report.
Great. We also have Scott Snyder.
And we have Melanie too.
Oh, sorry.
Melanie has just reported no conflicts.
All right. Next up will be the public comment. Eileen, is there anybody, a member of the public there that wants to say anything?
There is no member of the public that I'm aware of.
All right, so we'll just leave that open till the end in case anybody shows up. Next up, we were going to do an introduction to with the new police chief, but we're going to table that until next meeting, I'm gonna expect. And next up is new business. We need to approve the minutes from our previous meeting. Did everybody get a chance to look over the minutes and see anything they wanted to comment on?
I reviewed the minutes and I have no comment.
Yep, I think we're good.
All right, would somebody like to entertain a motion?
I will motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second it.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, minutes are approved unanimously. Next up, we're going to an overview of a current hiring process by the examiner, Eileen. Oh.
Did we lose Eileen?
Eileen, yeah. Are you there?
Oh, there we
go. Oh, you're muted, Eileen.
Hey, bear with me for a minute. I'm trying to pull up a PowerPoint for you.
Oh, sorry. Take your time.
Okay, can you all see what's up there on the screen for PowerPoint?
Yes.
This, I'm going to move. This we want to move up. Okay, I've just moved pictures off so you can take a full screen view. And just let me know if you can't see it. And I know Melanie, you don't have the advantage of seeing this, but I will send it to everyone afterwards so you've got it and you can refer to it if you want to. So you can see it, okay, wow, that's great. Okay, can you all hear me all right?
I can hear you.
Oh, you can, okay. All right, so what we're gonna do today is I'm gonna try to respond to what the commission asked for at our last meeting, which at this point is quite some time ago. Basically to provide some kind of an overview of what the hiring process is for our department. This is meant to be informal, questions are invited. And basically your role as the commission is to assure that the process and how the lists are created is fair and equitable. So that's basically what I'm going to be talking about. So you can see how we came to what we did when we arrive at certification for your review. So we have two pools of candidates that we draw upon, and one is entry level, one is lateral. For the entry level, there's no law enforcement experience required. Whereas for the lateral candidates, they need to have been in law enforcement for at least 12 months. And that's a different way to bring them into the process. The entry level has a lot more of a stringent, lengthy process for coming in as an applicant. They have a written exam and they go through public safety testing. They're contracted by us, and I'll talk about that a little bit more in the next slide, to do this exam. And the laterals, they don't have any written exam. They come in with a background, brief background statement with certifications, whereas the entry has to do a very full personal history background statement. And then the oral board is the same. So that's just kind of it in a nutshell to see how these two groups come in. And when they go to the police chief, they go as two separate groups, two separate lists. They're listed on our website separately. But the advantage to the chief in the review is that there still is an entitlement for each list to have a sufficient number of candidates to meet the current, at that time, vacancy. So the public PST test, public service testing that I mentioned, they are they're contracted by us and by most of the other law enforcement departments in Washington. And what they do is a preliminary testing of all the applicants that come to the police department for consideration. And the testing process, there's two parts. There's a written one and there's a physical as well. And this slide is summarizing for you the written part. And it focuses on skills and abilities, and it looks at personality and character traits. So the first one, the cognitive abilities, basically aptitude and reasoning. The work styles is the ability to work as a team as well as independently. Biographical data, capture of experience and background. Integrity and ethics is the moral compass. How honest can this person be expected to be? Situation-based judgment is, of course, so important, ability to quickly analyze all factors, and they have to be able to do that, especially under stress, and that's how the testing is oriented. And intercultural sensitivity is a test of open-mindedness and basically the recognition of self-prejudice, which is something that some departments are doing in a actually more detailed fashion these days. The physical ability, which is the next part of the testing that's done by them, is basically, it's along the lines of like the faster you go, the higher your score. And there's a sprint part, 300 meters. You get to have to do that in 71 seconds as a minimum and 56 seconds as a maximum. Push-ups, minimum 21, maximum 35, no time limit. That sounds like a give there. The sit-ups, minimum 30, max 38, 1 minute time limit on that. And then the run is, it's 1.5 miles. So it's like, it's pretty much a 10 minute mile, 14 minutes, 31 seconds for a time limit. Now, right now, because of COVID-19, they're not testing applicants for the physical ability. And so what we're getting right now is just the scores without the physical ability being tested. But I will say, so that you know, is that this particular test is very similar to what's done at the academy, just as they enter it. So it could be a way that we're gonna be looking at the physical ability in the future. The personal history statement.
Well, Eileen, yeah. Sorry, just interrupting real quick, apologize. But on that question, so knowing that we might be in this sort of predicament around COVID for sort of X period of time, right? Could be another 12 months, 18 months, like who knows? What's the plan then to reintroduce that physical ability testing? I know we've suspended it for now, but are we thinking through what we might do longer term if we're just kind of in this sort of a protracted period? And is there, you know, some
good question
thinking around that?
I've asked that question. I don't know that the police chief at this point has made a decision, or that PST has come to a final decision quite yet about how it's going to be done. I don't know that they have decided that it can be done remotely, but it could be that it could be done remotely the way they're trying to do the other part of the testing. So I guess I would just say for now, the question's out. I think the police chief here, his thought is that if you have to pass that before you get into the academy, you know, we know it's going to be done at some point. The risk being that we've got someone in the process and what's involved time-wise and expense-wise that may not pass that test. But I do know that here in Bainbridge, we work really closely to make sure they're ready for that test before the academy. So that, you know, they're up to speed on it. So I guess I when last time I talked to him about that, just very briefly, he hasn't had much time, but that was the thought at that point. Does that answer your question?
Yes, no, thank you. Thank you, I was just curious.
Eileen, if I might.
Yep.
Scott Snyder. Two thoughts. Eileen mentioned fair and equitable. The other test as we go through here that is applied is, you know, is the process open and competitive? Something to think about. Also on this particular subject, the only concern I raised would be having individuals on the same list that had been tested under different circumstances. One way that could be addressed would be to establish an interim hiring list that utilized the academy, and then when you return to normal, allow testing so that these physical fitness testing, so these individuals could come back onto the main list. The idea would be to have two parallel lists that the chief could choose from. That's not uncommon. For example, some cities have established parallel lists where they want candidates that are fluent in the Spanish language, for example. So they have two lists, two testing processes. Again, a ways around the problem, but the important thing would be that everyone on a list was subject to the same testing criteria. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott, that was really helpful. Did you have any further questions on that issue, anyone?
I do not.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so in addition to what we just talked about there earlier, the psychological personality and the physical fitness test, the candidates all have to complete a personal history statement. And this, again, I'm still talking about entry level, not laterals. It goes over their background in detail. And public safety testing fairly recently has revamped that particular part of their process, and it's really quite detailed, and it's much, much better from my perspective. But the latest version runs, I mean, on average, it's about 40 pages. So it includes information about all the things that are mentioned here on the slide, in-depth personal information about self and family and education background, experience, employment, detailed references. Most people put between 10 and 13 on there. Status of any other applications they've made and their military history. So that revision, I would just say it's been really helpful, I think, for some of the background investigations that we've done. It saved a lot. It certainly saves, it's a more clear picture of what's really going on. You can see right away if it's going to be a problem or not, I think, in reviewing that. And one of the things that I review for is whether or not there might be some automatic disqualifiers, and I'll talk about that in a minute. So the other, the last sections of that personal history statement also go into financial history. You know, if you've ever been in debt of any kind, why, legal history, drug use, and That's a really interesting one. I'll just say I see a lot of drug use coming in because we've got, you know, younger candidates are coming in on the entry level. A lot of them have done experimentation, especially if they're coming out of college. And they'll talk about that. And, you know, that has to be assessed. Their motor vehicle history, accidents, being at fault, how many, and then inappropriate behaviors, a myriad of things that are discussed there. And I mentioned that automatic disqualifiers, so that I know have we talked about this? I don't think we did the first meeting or not. We did at the end of the year last year before some of you came on board. And we have been refining what's called the automatic Bainbridge Island disqualifier list. So when I'm looking at these personal history statements and what PST sends us, I am looking to see if there's anything that automatically pulls them out of our criteria. And we've been revamping this particular list. It is online, just so you know, if you want to refer to it at all. And I can also send it to you after this meeting. We did, as an example, revamp the drug use piece because one of the recent changes with the Washington state law legalizing marijuana, it made it really difficult because many, if not almost all of the applicants have said they've had marijuana and dealt with marijuana. And it's of course legal in the state, but it's not federally. So we were disqualifying a lot of people before we made a change in the automatic disqualifier. I mean, a lot of students, particularly out of college. So,
And Eileen?
Yeah, go ahead.
I might just clarify for our new folks that this is within the purview of our group. So these are, these automatic disqualifiers are something that we recommend. So Eileen, Scott recommending will suggest areas that we might want to take a look at, and we'll look at, discuss, and decide if we want to change those disqualifiers. That's part of our Civil Service Commission.
Right. Thanks, Joe. Because basically, you know, I may come to you all, and generally that's in after talking with Scott and saying, hey, you know, I'm seeing a trend here. Something seems to be not working well or not quite right. We need to bring it to the commission. So we have done that certainly in this last year.
And if I might, think of them as filters that are exercised by the Secretary Chief Examiner. Two purposes, really. One, not to waste resources. Interviews are tough to set up and proceed on. But the other is to be as nimble and competitive for candidates as possible. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott. Okay, so once the applicants make it through the process to this point, I will go ahead and invite them to attend an interview. And I'm looking for them to provide a positive reply, because sometimes some time has gone by, depending on what has happened. And I want to make sure they're still on board, they're still interested in applying to Bainbridge Island. So I would say it's really important to get on board with them really quickly in order to get the best candidates. So I will send them all this information, the potential date and time for an interview, what the city application looks like, a description, the qualities we're looking for, that automatic disqualifier statement that I just mentioned, a statement of understanding that they understand everything with regard to the disqualifiers, et cetera, veteran point information for them, and very much wanting them to do a ride along with the department so that they know how to apply for that if they've not done it already. So that all goes with the invitation tentatively. If they reply in the affirmative, everything is then sent to them in a more detailed way for how to show up here and exactly what date and time they will be seen and be invited to be part of an oral interview. So one of the things I would just say to you as you're kind of trying to get used to what is it we're really doing here, prior to COVID-19, this has been a really interesting piece because sometimes at the last minute, and sometimes it was more than sometimes, people just wouldn't show up or they would call that day. And to set up these panels is really lengthy, as Scott just mentioned. It's a three-person panel, which I'll talk about later a little bit. And a lot of work goes into setting it up. And so that it's interesting to see how that's happened as it's become more competitive for us to find good candidates. Sometimes they will drop out at the last minute. They've got a better offer or whatever. So the list can change pretty much the last minute as far as who's going to come to an oral board. Okay, so just as I know, I mentioned veterans points for the state of Washington. It's just a one-time only opportunity. It's only for public service. It's after discharge from the service, and it can't be used for promotions. There's two basic categories there. There's a 5% and there's a 10%. 10% is having served during a period of war, and the RCW has a definition of that, which is really quite long, because we've almost been in war pretty much totally without stop for the last 20 or so years, if not more. 5% for no period of war, or if they're receiving military retirement. If they serve during peacetime, which is again a tiny, tiny little window. And if they are called to service from a city, county, or political subdivision, they're also entitled to veterans points at that point for their next appointment, or to an appointment. I should say to an appointment, it's not a next appointment. Okay, and that's all done, that's all calculated before you see the list. That's all part of what is on that list that you see when it comes to the numbers. Okay, so the oral board we talked about, right now it's containing three representatives, a member of the Bainbridge Police Department, a member from a neighboring police department, generally in Kitsap County, and we have a community member as well. And basically that assures a voice for the local community, for surrounding police departments with whom we have a very cooperative arrangement. And I'll just say that we do the same thing for them. You know, Paulsbo, Bremerton, Sheriff, any of the folks that we work very closely with in the county. We provide the service and they provide it to us. And I'll just say that it's been really an interesting process for me to observe. By the way, I am in the room during that, but I do not weigh in with any observations. So,
excuse me, Eileen, for the newer members, it's critical that the majority of the board be out from outside of the Bainbridge Island Police Department in order to comply with the case law, which emphasizes the need to for the commission to maintain its distance from and separation from the police department itself. So the board cannot be dominated by the department. The reason we for the 2-to-1 ratio. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Scott. That's so important because it kind of goes to the heart of the civil service and why it was created, and to try to avoid that kind of in-house selection. Okay, when we get to the World Board, after everybody comes together, the panel is all trained together, and we really try to, I do the training, and it's done hopefully as consistently as possible. It's done in writing and verbally. So they have the instructions in writing. They're all the same for everyone. And they have the opportunity to ask a lot of questions and to understand why they're asking the questions that they're asking of the candidates. We do try to schedule lateral candidates and entry candidates as separate groups. But recently, since we've had so few candidates, we've had to do them together. But the difference is between the lateral and the entry level is a matter of depth and time. So they have longer time to make a presentation, and the questions that they're asked really are about how much experience they've had, something they can reflect on, whereas an entry level doesn't have the experience in law enforcement to be able to reflect on some of the questions that it might ask about use of force, et cetera. So the same questions asked by the same interviewer of each candidate. So That's all kept consistent. And then after the interview takes place, which is around an hour or so, each member rates, and they rate it separately and quietly. And then afterwards, everyone goes through and talks about why they rated what they did. And at that point, there's an opportunity for them to discuss. They can talk about like something they may have observed that someone else did not, that was either a positive, a negative, whichever, and then discuss that a bit. And I mean, I'll just say I've had some, it's been really moving to see how hard everybody's working to make sure they come up with an objective view of that person, which of course we know is always difficult to do. And in the end, they may try to persuade each other back and forth, especially with things they may have missed or they realize, oh, I forgot about that. But then in the end, they don't have to agree. It's just basically they can have their own marks. But generally speaking, they're usually pretty close. So that's how that process has been working since I've been observing it.
Kelly, just a quick question on that. Is there an opportunity once they've rated and then they've had discussion to go back and change their ratings? Is it just by vote, or is it like the points they've given in the rating that make it up?
They go back and they have the opportunity to answer the first part. They can change, and it's okay. Each question with each can change. They can change any one of those.
Okay.
Any number. Yeah, and you know, sometimes I do caution them at the end is to really think about, you know, you have all the bias that occurs, right? First person, last person. And I go through all the biases that we know about from research and try to make them aware of that. And they try to consider that. And you know, one of them being, okay, you know, think about you've seen all these people, and now did you really come up with the, you know, right rating as you look at that back, you know, looking that back through the whole day. So
yeah, and do we ask them to rate the as compared to other candidates they've seen, like as, on a scale, or are we yeah. or do we ask them to look just simply at this person based on how they marry up in comparison, you know, in relation to the requirements for the job?
Yeah, exactly. They're skills and abilities type questions. They originally, some of them, I know at least some of them came out of the California law enforcement board, and they're really quite well done, and they are, you know, there's objective pieces to how you're going to rate, what you're rating on. So it's not just a kind of, hey, this feels good, or gee, that sounded kind of good. There's things that have to occur in the dialogue that is the response from the candidate. And they actually can sort of check it as it's coming in, that key components of an answer about a particular issue that has been declared to be essential by the department here. So,
great.
Is that any question?
Yep, thank you.
Okay. Okay, so again, this is, you know, I know Scott mentioned also that the major job of the commission that you have is to certify that the process to this point is fair and equitable. So we try to do everything we can to assure that and to document it. And for the entry level, that's the results from the interview, the public service testing, and any veteran points that are computed in addition. And for the laterals, it's the results of the interview and the veterans points. And then once we do that, I assign a random number to each person, and that assures confidentiality of the scores. And then once the list is certified, the candidates are each notified of their status. And then I revise the integrated list of all the viable candidates. And then that gets posted on the Bainbridge Island website with the random numbers associated with the scores. It's actually kind of complicated. but I try to do it as fast as I can. So that it can be done in a way that makes us competitive as a department, which we really, again, as I mentioned earlier on, is extremely important right now. And then the lists are sent to the police chief as requested. So any questions on that? So one of the things that happened here recently, it was really nice that Shay actually came in the morning after we did the last test. because I knew that something was going to happen potentially with COVID, and that this was probably going to be our last chance to interview candidates for a while. And so that was really nice. So Trenton was away because nobody knew this was going to happen the way it did. And so that ended up being a really good outcome for us. So I'll talk about it a little bit later. Any questions though on that process? Hope I'm not going too fast.
Nope, it's great.
I can't see your faces, so I can't tell anything. That is a really hard part of this right now. Okay, so what happens next? So, you know, your job is kind of over after certification in a way, but there's still a long road ahead for the candidates and the department too, because there's a lot more that has to happen. The background investigation can be quite lengthy, and if we have a candidate from out of state or that has a very complex history, which sometimes happens, it can take some time. It might involve travel by our detectives. So that's done. And then if that's comes out okay, there could be a conditional offer. And then after the conditional offer, there is a polygraph, psychological, medical exam. And that takes a bit of time also, after which is a final offer. And then after that, there's an academy. And so the academy is, it's 3 months long, and the waiting list, there's a waiting list to get into the academy. So one of the things that department tries to do is, line up some slots in the academy ahead of time, because we kind of know maybe along the line, as soon as we can know, we try to know to get a slot so that we know we're going to have a vacancy, the person will be hired around this time and they'll be going to the academy. So the entry level has a 3-month academy and the laterals have a 1-month academy. And the difference then after that is that probation for the entry level is 12 months after the academy. And for the lateral, it's, the lateral is 1 month. It's a 1-month academy, and then it is after the final offer, probation begins. So that's a different time frame. So you can see the difference. The entry level could take maybe 18 months, and the lateral quite a bit less. Of course, the background on them is usually quite a bit faster as well, because they're usually known to a department who's already done some background testing. So. And I guess the reason I say this is because I think that we're going to be potentially doing a lot more with lateral candidates than entry, because we can get them through the process quicker. We can pick up the background and find out more about them. They're tested, if you want to put it that way, in a way, and they come with more experience and sophistication around law enforcement. So I just mentioned that because, that's could be, you may see that we're picking up more people in the lateral, from the lateral list than we are from the entry. And I will just say.
Eileen, could you go back to the last slide a second?
Yep. Oop, I haven't done this on this before. Okay.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out two things to the commissioner to put this in context. This slide contains, as Eileen mentioned, you have control of the process both directly and through the secretary chief examiner through the creation of the certification list. Everything on this slide is within the hands of the chief and the department. You'll recognize that 1 and 2, the conditional offer of employment, is an ADA requirement, because you can't conduct the polygraph, psychological, and medical test until you've made that offer. At the end of probation, during probation, it's always described as a continuation of the hiring process, the chief at his discretion can discharge a probationer. This slide contains the 5 areas where the commission has little or no control over the process. It's in the hands of the chief. You're setting up the hiring process through the previous process, and then at the end of the probation, disciplinary actions or discharges can be appealed to you. But this is the part that occurs outside of your purview. Thank you.
Scott, I have just a clarification about that, making sure I understand. So are you saying that a conditional offer is made after the background check, and then if 2, 3, and 4 come out all right, that person has a job? That's what you're saying about the ADA requirements, or did I misunderstand?
The Americans with Disabilities Act prohibits an employer from giving a psychological or medical examination without having made a conditional offer of employment. And I don't want to get into too much detail, but the burden shifts to an employer to provide a bona fide reason for not hiring a candidate. They're trying to prevent physical or discrimination on the basis of disability. Admittedly, it doesn't have much application to a police candidate because of the structures and requirements, but it's a technical requirement. One thing that doesn't show up, most chiefs also have a chief's interview in here where they sit down and talk and make their own assessment to determine how the chief would exercise his right under the rule of three to hire from among the top candidates.
And Joe, if I just to be sure that this is clear to everyone, by final offer, there's still a caveat of passing the academy and making it through probation before you really are an employee permanent. So that's okay.
I have one other question that's kind of only semi-related. Is this the first meeting that our new people have been, that Scott's been here? Have we introduced him and his role with us, and have we gone through that? Did I miss that?
Yes, we have.
Yeah, we did.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, who is this guy? Always a good question.
Yeah, I always need to be reminded.
We had two training sessions, one with our city attorney here, Robbie, and then also with Scott on two different topics.
Right. Thank you.
I'm sorry you missed that. Good question, though. Who are you, Scott? I'm sorry, I should have acknowledged you when we started out, and I didn't do that, so I apologize for that. And then this is the next to last slide, just so you know. You had, as a commission, asked, you know, what were the applicants, what were the numbers, what did it look like recently, what did it look like historically? So this is what I was able to garner from the records. And of course, as you all know, I haven't been here very long, but this is what I was able to find and confirm with Kate. So in 2017, I've looked at 3 years, so in 2017, 142 entry applicants, 105 got through public service testing. And then there was a question about gender issues. We only know that because PST keeps this information. They were able to share that with me. So you can see there's a pretty big difference, 94 male, 11 female of the people who pass. And then we had 58 lateral candidates. The gender information was not recorded, as I mentioned earlier. So 2018, you see 87 entries, 64 passed, 62 male, 2 female, 42 lateral. We don't have gender information. You can see the totals for the hiring in 2017, 5, 3 lateral, 2 entry. In 2018, 2, 1 lateral, 1 entry. And then it's like, this is not many people to be hired. I mean, at least in the world I'm in, and I think a lot that you guys have been in, this is really not many people hired for a huge amount of work. 2019, we had 125 entries, 98 passed PST. We have 90 male, 7 female, 1 unknown, 39 laterals. and three were hired, two lateral, one entry. So you kind of see how this is really, with how often we do these and all of the work that goes, it's kind of interesting just to look at that. So I was really glad you asked that question because it gave me an opportunity to look at this as well. Do you want to look at anything else? Or I've got one more quick slide for you, because I think really what you want to know is what are the trends. And I know that this is something I did talk with the police chief about this. He saw the first draft of this a few days ago. We have got qualified lateral candidates. The numbers are really decreasing rapidly, very rapidly. The entry level group is almost no life experience in almost all cases. So our numbers are smaller in laterals, with very few women applying, very, 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 very few. And overall, I mean, it's quite dismaying for me to look at. I just reviewed everything that was up to date as of Friday, with all of our entry level, for example, and our laterals. And the candidate pool is really decreasing quality in numbers. We've been very lucky. I think we've had some very high quality people hired this year. And last year, and so that's really great, and we will stay with that. You know, I don't think we're going to be willing to accept anything less. I don't think the department's going to do that. But I just wanted you to be aware of the what's going on out there, and of course with everything that's happening now, that may be even worse for the future. But so I hate to end on a negative note, but I think that's just for you to be aware of. Do you have any questions about this overall process?
I'm curious about what are we attributing the decline to? Do we have a sense of, you know, why we're not getting, you know, more women to apply? Do we have a sense of why the numbers continue to decrease, or the quality and numbers are decreasing? Do we know what's causing that trend? Is that an overarching trend we're seeing just across counties, cities, states, or is that more, I guess, related to Bainbridge Island, or is this just a trend overall? I'm just curious because this sounds concerning to me.
Over the past 2 years, the number of candidates for law enforcement vacancies nationally has decreased 60%.
Yeah. And do we have any data or evidence around why is that? Is it, you know, is it environment? Is it, you know, just even some of the recent activities of the last 4 or 5 days, right? I think there's certainly been some studies and articles around, you know, people being less willing to want to go into the police force because of, you know, just, you know, a lot of things that have been happening over time. I'm just curious, because if we're going to attempt to try to help reverse this, or to help figure out ways to mitigate what we're seeing here in the declines and lack of women and those kinds of things, we kind of need to understand, you know, what's driving it, or can we look at, you know, what are the potential drivers, and are there ways that we can mitigate it? I don't know if there are, and maybe you all have looked at that already, but, you know, continuing to see decreases like this, obviously it's going to make the job of this group and yours, Eileen, extremely difficult to find quality candidates. So if we're already starting to see that trend, it would be great if we could start thinking about how do we get ahead of this, and what are the factors that are causing it, and can we mitigate it in some way, shape, or form to at least, you know, level it out if we can, or reverse some of it if possible.
Well, I would just...
Oh,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I would have three anecdotal comments. One is that women are still discriminated against in the police departments in Kitsap County. Secondly, money. And thirdly, most people would prefer to live where they work. And as a police officer on Bainbridge Island, you can't do that. The officer that I did my ride along with, his wife is a teacher, and his biggest aim in life would be to be able to live on Bainbridge Island. And he told me it won't be possible. That's all. Those would be all my comments. Thanks.
Yeah, those are good call outs.
I think the public service in general is having the same challenge, maybe not to the same extent, but there's been a degrading of that as a profession, as a calling, as a career in the last, at least certainly last 3 to 4 years, if not five or more, but certainly the last 3 or 4 years. And so it's hard to say. I think the larger cultural context that we're living in is part of the problem. As far as the inability to recruit women, the recruiting process really has to take place at a number of levels, but most importantly from the department. And so I think we can be in conversation with the chief more about that as the future goes on here in the next for the next few meetings. I know that PST, public safety testing, again, that's only the entry level, but they are trying to do recruitment virtually so that there's an opportunity for our department to participate in that. And I don't believe we've done that yet. So I think there's some ways to go out there and do that. But the other point that was raised that Terry mentioned, I mean, I've certainly seen this. I certainly saw it in the fire department too, that, you know, culturally it's not viewed as a warm place for women. And so overcoming that is more than Bainbridge Island. In fact, probably it's very, very relatively quite pleasant here. And we have been able to hire, I think now the second woman this year. So that's really, considering you've seen what our numbers are, relatively speaking, that's really pretty good. So I know that doesn't answer all your questions. I think recruitment is really a big issue, and how we do it and what we can be doing better is a big challenge for the department.
Yeah, and I'm curious, is it within the purview of this group to be looking at these kinds of things and thinking about, you know, how we might be able to do things differently or giving some suggestions or working with the chief? Or I'm just curious as to our ability to potentially influence or help or provide suggestions or ways to possibly mitigate. I'm just curious around that.
I think it is beyond the purview, but it's certainly not unwelcome.
If I could jump in, Eileen, I know the commission has looked in the past at ways of being more competitive during the testing process. Eileen mentioned early contacts with candidates. The state patrol assigns a mentor advisor to each candidate as soon as they know that someone has shown an interest in them. And things that the commission can do is to be as nimble as possible in your process. That is, don't let things drag on, and so that you can be competitive for the candidates that are available. Sorry to interrupt,
Diary. No, that's okay. One of the other things that we did just change here, I don't know, it's about maybe 6 months or so ago. I could see that we were waiting for the next meeting, which was the tradition to certify the list. And sometimes, because of the way things would go, when you'd have the right number of candidates, you can't always time that to the Civil Service Commission meeting. And you want to do that, you know, do those interviews as soon as possible. But so we were able to change so that Trennan could come in, the chair, and Trennan's absence, Shay could come in and certify the list. So we just started doing that pretty recently. And, you know, as I mentioned, Shay certified this last list, the morning after we did everything. So that's a really good point that Scott just made, just like we have to be on it. And one of the things that happens, if people contact me, I try to get them connected with the department right away. So they haven't done a ride along. They get in and they see it and they see, is this really where I want to be? This is the community I want to serve. But sometimes there's other factors to just keep us from getting everything all together. But I think it's really important, if you have a good candidate, to go for it quickly. And I think that with what I'm going to ask you to do here next, one of the things I'm going to ask you to do is to consider whether we might be able to have your permission to have remote meetings for interviewing the next group of candidates, because we did talk about this recently as a commission before the new folks just arrived, actually right at the end of the year last year. Of course, we didn't have COVID then, But the question was, you know, should we be doing remote interviews? Because we've got candidates like from Alaska and a lot from California, actually, and some from the East Coast. You know, we were asking them to travel here for an oral board, which of course is, it's a sign of their commitment, but boy, that's a lot of investment for someone to make on not necessarily a very big wage. So we decided not to, because the experience had been that if we don't see people in person, I believe this is what we talked about, that we don't get the same sense of the person. But I think at this point we're past that, and that we need to consider having remote meetings for our next group. And so that's one thing I'd like to bring to you tonight to think about as a, and actually would like to have permission that we could go ahead and do that as a group. So if you guys would like to talk about that a little bit.
I would be in favor of that.
Yeah, I would as well. I think certainly the current conditions right now in the environment, it's sort of a necessity. But I just think in general, we may be missing out on good applicants because they may not be able to make that trek across country as an example. So I think there's just great tools out there now, just like Zoom as we're using it. So I think we should absolutely take advantage of that and broaden the pool as much as we possibly can. That would be my two cents.
Okay, that was Shay.
I even wonder if we're going to be able to have in-person interviews right. in any soon, any immediate time. And if the need and ability comes to do it before we could do a larger group time, we may have to have all interviews remote. Mm-hmm. I'm certainly in favor, whatever, of this next time or giving it a try if people want to do it, but it could be that we even have to do it that way.
Mm-hmm. Scott, do we need to have a motion for this, or can we just go ahead and have a conversation and make a decision? Commission can make a decision.
I'd suggest, although the Secretary Chief Examiner has broad authority under your rules, I'd suggest that a motion would be appropriate. I'd sent you some language for a potential motion, Eileen.
Yep.
But again, I don't think you need anything more formal, because the location of the interview and the, you know, when, where, and how has always been a Secretary Chief Examiner prerogative. The motion that I sent to Eileen is tied to a phase four reopener under the governor's plan. If you've taken a look at the phases, phase three is the resumption of face-to-face governmental activity, and four is the full return. But I'll leave that to your discretion. Again, a resolution I think is appropriate just given your history of on-site interviews.
Okay, so I have heard.
Have we heard Trennan's view on this topic?
Thanks, Joy. I'm all for it. I wasn't before. I thought that in-person interviews are very important, but with the new environment, I think it's necessary.
Thanks.
Scott, if I could read your motion, I am pulling it up on my phone here as we're talking. And I will just read this out loud to everyone. I don't think I'd be the appropriate person to make the resolution, but or the motion, but oops. Oh, just
A suggested motion.
And you can read it to us, and one of us can say, so moved.
Okay, I move to authorize the Secretary Chief Examiner to utilize remote access tools such as Zoom to conduct candidate interviews and incorporating interviewers pending the return to full government function under phase four of the government's emergency order. So I just want to check in, Scott, that does not necessarily obligate us to return automatically to in-person unless we meet again and decide we want to. We kind of can weigh what our experience has been at that
point. I'll leave that to the commission to decide. I didn't want something open-ended, but rather to provide something limited to the commission. I think that's either tool would be at their discretion.
Does someone want to make a motion?
So moved.
Was that Terry?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
All right, motion carries.
Okay, thank you. Just to give you an update on the process to date, I just wanted to let you know that on March 10th, we had 6 applicants that attended the interviews, entry and lateral. And as I already mentioned all this about the scored and certification, Shay came in and did that for us. At that point, we had 3 vacancies. And for the lateral group, we added 2 names to the previous list. We removed 2 names that had expired. For the entry, we added 4 names, we removed 1. And then with 3 vacancies, we were able to update the 5 top names from each list to send additional candidates to the police chief. And currently, good news is we have a conditional offer accepted by 1 lateral candidate, and we expect an acceptance probably within 24 hours by another lateral candidate. And that will then leave us 1 vacancy currently approved for filing. Filling. So that's to kind of give you an update on the status right now. So that's, I think, good news. So the last thing for consideration, I just wonder whether this is the best time to have our future meetings. And the reason I bring it up is because the catalyst for me today is that as staff started returning back to City Hall at a partial basis, Tuesday's a really busy time here. Because of the preparation for council meetings, there's a lot more people here than there might be any other day. So I just want to throw it out. It's fine with me. I can pretty much do any time. But if you would like to discuss that and make a change, it might be a little bit. It might be a little bit better another day, like a Wednesday or Thursday morning or whatever. Does anybody want to make a change?
I'm open. Maybe you could tell us what you think, a couple possibilities that you think would be ideal, and then we could let you know if we have any reason not to do those.
Yeah.
Okay. I would say Thursday morning, Wednesday morning or afternoon. Actually, I mean, Wednesday morning or afternoon, and Thursday morning would probably be the best. Other than
for me, Thursday morning or Wednesday afternoon would work. Wednesday morning wouldn't be good for me.
Okay.
Wednesday afternoon would work for me.
Okay.
Wednesday afternoon would work for me too.
Okay. I'm just looking at it, we would continue to do it the first Wednesday of the month.
Yes.
That should work for me as well.
Question for the commission, 2 ways to do this. You could instruct by motion the secretary, chief examiner to provide notice of special meetings. Sorry, this is Open Public Meetings Act detail here. If you establish by a resolution at your next meeting, a regular meeting date, then you don't have to publish notice. But you'd need to do that with more formality than a motion. You could do this at each meeting. You could set a special meeting date and then give 24-hour notice through the city clerk. Either or, again, the third way, it's kind of a combination, is have set a special meeting date for next Wednesday and then, or sorry, the next Wednesday date and instruct Eileen and I to bring you back a resolution setting that as your regular date. I think the question for the commission is you want to do this on a temporary basis while the staff transitions back, or do you want to permanently change your meeting date?
Well, over the course of my tenure in this board, we've changed our meeting dates quite a few times. Day and times, depending on people's availability. So it I don't think it's a very big deal to change as long as it works for everyone. And I don't know if Eileen wants to send out choices for everyone that people are, that aren't here.
So Melanie, we don't have Melanie, but four of you said Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah.
So is that mean like, what time with, does that mean like 3 or 2 or 1 or what do you, what's?
I think 3 is good.
I would agree.
I agree too.
Okay.
So I agree. 3 o'clock on Wednesday.
Okay. So how about if I just check in with Melanie and make sure that's okay for her?
I think it's important that it be unanimously a date and time that works. So I think if it doesn't work for Melanie, we need to go back to the drawing board.
I agree.
Okay. If it doesn't work for Melanie, we'll stick with Tuesday pending another discussion.
So Eileen, you'll do a special meeting for next month. And at that point, we'll do a formal resolution.
Is that what you were saying, Scott? Did I understand that correctly?
Correct. We need to do a resolution to permanently change, but you could, they could instruct you to give the special meeting notice. I'm trying to save the clerk work in the long term if that's going to be your permanent date.
Okay, so we'll make that a special meeting, and I'll check in with Melanie and
I'll get your resolution.
Right. If she can't make that Wednesday meeting that we're talking about, the special meeting, we just won't do it. We'll just do Tuesday. Is that okay?
At least for the next meeting, and then we can see if we can find something different that works for all of us at our next meeting.
That sounds good. Everybody okay with that?
Yes.
That sounds good. And Eileen, you can just send us an email. If it doesn't work out for Melanie, we can find a new date in the meantime.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else?
No, was that your report?
That was my report.
Okay, then if no members of the public have shown up to make a comment, say the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Thanks, everyone.
Pleasure. Thank everyone. You. Take care.
Take Bye-bye. Care.
Bye-bye.